This is Word Radio. On this episode of Warbird Radio, we're sitting down with two young guns who have recently flown a DC-3 across the Atlantic Ocean on the same route that they would have taken back in World War II. We're talking to Job Savage and, of course, Luke. Luke's joining us here. Luke Hedden, welcome to the show, guys.
Happy to be here.
We've only been talking about doing this for a few months, and I'm glad we were able to kind of figure this out at the National Warbird Operators Conference. Your dad, Tim Savage, who is... I don't know if Tim's ever been on the show.
I don't believe so.
I don't think he's always successfully avoided the microphone at every turn. And we're just going to keep this tradition alive. He's kind of like, if you were to compare it to late night, I guess he's kind of like Matt Damon. He's never been on. Has he ever been on Jimmy Kimmel? Has Matt Damon ever been? I don't think he's ever been on it.
I'm not sure.
I don't think he's ever been on it. Well, anyway, glad to have you both here. Let's talk about DC-3s and tailwheel flying and all the cool stuff that you're doing right now, because you actually have rolled out a type rating program for the DC-3.
Correct. Yep.
Talk to me about that.
We just launched our website last night, actually, dc3experience.com. We're going to be offering full PIC checkouts and DC-3s, SIC checkouts, and recurrency. We're based near Ocala, Florida, and we have two airplanes. We have a DC-3. It's the Western Airlines airplane that famously went to Normandy this year. And we also have the Wabbit Express, which is a C-47.
Say that again.
The Wabbit Express.
Yeah.
C-47.
The Wabbit Express.
The Wabbit.
Yeah, you got to get it right. You got to get it right. Okay. And Luke, you're flying with this. Did you go through the program?
Yes, sir. So I did their SIC program, and Tim graciously sponsored me on that program. And it was a great checkout program. I think, Joe's really knowledgeable in the airplane, taught me a lot of tricks from his experience. I mean, just a lot of flying over the years. He's super proficient. He definitely knows the ins and outs of that airplane. So I highly recommend that program. Had a lot of fun, too. Easy, laid back, but got a lot out of it.
What's it like flying with Job?
It's just fun. He's a laid-back instructor, but he teaches, that's his teaching style, and I felt like it was very efficient, and I got a lot out of it.
Let's talk about being young and flying warbirds. Everybody in this room is probably 60 years older than you.
Right.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
You're in your 20s, both of you, right?
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same age that a lot of the World War II guys were. Well, you would have been older than Lucky Luckadoo was at the end of the war.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys would have been the old men flying the C-47s and B-17s back then. What do you think we need to do to get more folks your age involved in this?
I think personally, I see a lot of Florida training going on, being a flight instructor, a current flight instructor in Florida. And I see a huge drive to just go to the airlines. I don't see people wanting to treat flying as a fun hobby. They see it strictly as a career. And I think more people need to get out there and they need to realize that these airplanes exist and that these opportunities are doable, that warbird people are trying to get young guys involved. A lot of people are scared thinking, oh, no, they don't want me involved. It's a reclusive community. And that's not the case at all. We actually want to get as many of these people interested, flying, writing books, drawing pictures, however they can help working on these airplanes. But I see a lack of, in the flight training environment, a lack of people wanting to improve and broaden their horizons, get a different experience. So the first thing you can do is go volunteer at your local museum, your local flight school, whatever it is. Mop the floors, give tours, cockpit tours of the airplanes at air shows. Just get involved any way you can. And I believe that these people will open the doors for them, for these people.
You just brought up a great point. The number one thing that warbird operators hate about going to an air show is that people touch their airplanes. They hate it. I don't blame them. I mean, you want the airplane to be secured, but nobody understands these airplanes. And so when the family runs up, it's either the mom or the dad who touch it first, and then the kids touch it. They don't understand it. They have to put their hands on it to connect with it. It's this psychological, physical response when you see something like that. It's this precious gift that's in front of us. But when you can open an airplane up and put someone inside it, and they smell it, I mean, that has an effect. What was your first memory of being around a warbird, Luke?
So I kind of got into warbirds on accident. One of my friends was volunteering with another museum, and he was selling merchandise. And I kind of got behind the merchandise table on accident and started selling T-shirts. And that's a long story short, but I got the offer to ride back on that C-47 to its home base. And then after that ride and just being around that crew and camaraderie, I fell in love with something that I really wasn't expecting to fall in love with. And, you know, ever since then, it's just kind of been one of the more important things in my life is to keep these things flying because I realize how important it is.
Tell me about that night when you go home. Mm-hmm. What did you do?
I tried to research, you know, local museums, try to find organizations to get involved. I was asking my friends, and they were kind of preaching the same thing that Job preaches and I try to preach now is, you know, just get involved, you know, just get your foot into the door. Whether that's just, you know, offering to clean the airplane or something like that, just, you know, and making that connection with your name to somebody that's on the crew. That those first couple steps, you know, that is what's going to get that ball rolling for you. And once that ball rolling is rolling, you know, it's going to go far.
And did you find people were receptive or they were like, leave me alone, kid. I don't want to talk to you.
It was, you know, everyone wanted to be a part of this, almost my story of like, let's get him involved in Warbirds. So this community is great, especially for the young people. There's
and
so
that's
many
what
people.
I don't think people understand. They really don't understand that, and that it is a welcoming community, and you come to a place like NWOC, that's a great thing. And the 20 under 40 program, how has that impacted what you're doing?
I think it's great for raising awareness. I mean, it's showing more and more people out there, hey, there are young guys out here doing this stuff. They're flying the airplanes, they're wrenching on the airplanes, they're putting air shows together. It's definitely raising a lot of awareness. It's a really good organization. I'm really, really thankful that they invited me to do that, to be part of that, and I got nominated. I actually was unaware of the program myself until I got nominated, and I was just really grateful, really happy to hear that I have over 6 people nominate me. And it's just crazy that this community is so embracing of welcoming new people.
I think that's well said. I would like to go back in time just a little bit because you had a really interesting childhood. You had an exceptional childhood where you were born into this family. Your dad, I've known him for years, ran a magazine called Warbird Digest and has had just is handed a lot of things in Warbirds over the years. And you were sort of this, you know, you were the kid that grew up around this. And then all of a sudden, this desire awoke in you, and here you are. When did that happen, and what caused the light switch to go off, Job?
Just out of high school in 2020, June of 2020, I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. I wasn't a very studious person, honestly, so I didn't really know if I should go to college or what I really wanted to do. I was really interested in filmmaking, and I went up in a flight with my dad in our Cub in Indiana, and it kind of just sparked my attention again. You know, I was always interested in flying, but I never really, you know, I'd taken lessons on and off throughout the years since I was 13, and I just took this one more flight in the Cub, and I was like, maybe I want to try this out, get real serious about it for a while, trying to figure out what I want to do with my life, and I got the knack for it there. I started flying in our Cessna 150, and from June to September of 2020, I had worked on my private pilot certificate. And in September, I had accomplished that, and then I immediately went into tailwheel flying and got my tailwheel endorsement in our Cub, and from there, I was hooked. I just wanted to keep getting as many ratings, as many experiences as I could.
I remember there was a lot of back channel talk when you finally started flying. I don't know if you know this or not.
I don't know.
There were a lot of people, and I don't even know if Tim knows this really, but there were a lot of people, and it was this sort of grapevine thing, like, Job's getting serious. Job's really going to do this. Because we all knew you from, you know, going around to the air shows and watching you kind of grow up around your dad. And it was this, I don't know, I don't want to call it a groundswell. I don't want to make it bigger than it was and get your, you know, your head over here where you have to shrink it to get outside the door. But I'm telling you, Job, there were a lot of people that really got really excited when you got into this. And I think there are a whole group of people in the background, people that you probably... Some you might expect, some you might not expect, that were really pulling for you. I mean, you're one of the success stories in this, that you finally, you've made something out of this journey that you've been on, and people are paying attention to that. So there's a lot of people watching. What do you want the young people to know who are listening to this today?
The most important thing I found is it's all about I call it the two M's. You have your mindset and you have mentorship. You have to find a mentor that's going to fit your goals, fit your safety standards, and that's going to help you keep proficient in these airplanes. Isn't going to let you make stupid mistakes getting outside of aviation, removed from it, and then hopping back into it and making these silly mistakes. You got to find a mentor that that is going to have the same kind of goals and values as you. Find that mentor. Mine was Rick Siegfried. He helped me a lot in the T6 world, all the way up to racing at Reno. And he's always been there for me. Anytime I've ever had a question, comment, I could go to him. And he's had that safety mindset that I desire so much to instill in others, is that safety mindset. It's one of the reasons I like being an instructor. And I think it really starts with finding a good mentor, just somebody that you can relate to that has so much more experience that is going to stay, keep veering you on the right path so that you don't stray from it. And that can be a flight instructor. It could be a friend. It can be a relative. It can be anybody, really, just somebody that's just going to help keep you in the right lane and, meet as many people as you can, but keep mentors close and always refer to them. You can have multiple mentors, and I think it's really good to get as much experience as you can and talk to as many people as you can. Just get your name out there. Read books, watch YouTube videos. There's plenty of ways you can get info.
So what I love about your journey, and I think it's one of the better parts of this, is that you had a lot of great opportunities. You didn't have to do this.
No.
You didn't have to do this. You chose to do this, and it's been great to watch you and your dad do this as a father and son. It really has been great. And the fact that your heart is so open to this and that you're bringing around guys like Luke here and so many, there's an endless passel of young folks that followed Job around. And I think Tim's over here kind of smiling about this. It's great because you have been able to bring so many young folks involved in this that we're going to owe you a whole bunch in future years, because Job Savage is bringing them to the dance, and it's just great to watch this happen. It's been fun to follow along, Job, so thanks for coming on finally and sharing a little bit about this. The filmmaking thing, is there still a glimmer of hope that we might see some of that come through in what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I like taking videos of when I'm flying. Usually it's, I'm busy, I'm focused, so I don't have my phone out taking videos, but sometimes...
But now that you have an SIC.
right, and we did that on the way up here. We took a few videos, and it's just so that we can share this with the world and say, hey, here's what we're doing, you can do it too. And that's how our generation obviously gets connected to this stuff. They're on all the social media, and they see these airplanes, and then they see that airplane at Sun and Fun or Oshkosh, and they go, oh, wow, that's the Mustang I saw. That's Quicksilver that I saw online. And then they can actually feel that airplane and hear it and smell it. And it's just a beautiful thing that social media and the internet have allowed us to learn so much more about these airplanes. And you can put faces to names a lot easier and nose art to airplanes a lot easier.
How long should the video be?
I'd say under a minute, probably.
Yeah, there you go, right? That's what I was getting at. Yeah, under a minute. All right, and what else?
Unique stuff. I mean, just whatever you can do out there, backcountry flying or aerobatics or spins, whatever, catches somebody's attention. There's something for everybody in aviation. Some people like formation flying. Some people like aerobatics. Some people like general aviation, light sport stuff, helicopters, Just expose yourself to as much as you can and just get as many experiences as you can.
Good advice. All good advice from Job Savage and Luke Hedden. Thanks for sitting down with us, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate you coming on. And if folks want to get a hold of you, if they want to take the SIC course or if they want to do some tailwheel training, how do they do that?
Yeah, they can reach out to our email. All of our contact information is on our website, dc3experience.com. So that we've got our email and our phone number on the website.
Easy enough. You want to go fly the C-47, the DC-3, get a SIC or even a type rating in it. You could do that.
Absolutely.
With Job and his team down there in sunny Florida. And if you're lucky enough, Tim might buy an ice cream. If you sign up for the whole deal, right? Your dad owns a candy. Does he still own the candy shop?
No, we sold that actually.
Yeah. He's a nut. He'll do anything. You're like, you want to rehabilitate a downtown, Tim's your guy. You want to build a magazine, Tim's your guy. I mean, that's really great. You're learning from a great guy there, Job.
He's one of my mentors.
I'm telling you, you got to have a whole bunch of those folks. Listen, we're going to be back with more here from the National Warbird Operators Conference in a few more moments. We're glad you're listening to Warbird Radio. Stay tuned.
This is Warbird Radio. Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Just when you think it can't get any better, Tim Savage, the man himself, shows up. We were just talking to your son, Job, and I got to say, Tim, I'm really, really incredibly proud of him, and I can only imagine what you as a father must be feeling.
Yeah, I'm very proud of him. He's accomplished quite a bit. He's accomplished more in aviation than I have in just 4 years, and I've been doing it for 25, so it's been real fun for me to watch, and it's kind of become my new passion is just helping the young guys get involved. You know, I'm starting to get older, and it's been a lot of fun to see him and his buddies really start embracing this and do this more.
What do you say to the young people out there who are afraid of trying something because they might fail? You've been in business a long time.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of businesses come and go. You've had some passion projects that, I mean, I don't know how you even held on to it.
Well, I've had good ones and I've had bad ones. I've had businesses that have gone well. I've had businesses that have cratered. You know, I've seen the highs and the lows, but you know, I think that's one of the challenges kids have today is that they're a little afraid to step out and do it and to try things. And certainly in aviation, there's so many opportunities right now. And I believe there's a lot of opportunities in Warbird aviation and historic aviation, because like I said earlier, none of us are getting any younger. You look around this room and it's all gray hair, except for a few. And there's lots of opportunities. And I think that the industry as a whole is embracing the young people more and more every year. And I think that's really positive. So I think they just have to step out, take the risk, and, you know, find the right people to partner with, and they'll help them move forward.
You were a business guy. And I ask this question a lot of times because there's a huge disconnect. And Job, you can probably attest to this. People show up, they have no idea. They have no idea what, and I think they're not asking because they just don't know. They don't know what they need to do to become successful to own one of these aircraft. And I think there's two different tracks, right? There's the ownership track, but then there's also the track that you show up to the airport enough and you're going to get opportunities. We hear that all the time. But talk to me about that. What do you see as far as being successful goes enough to do this? What worked for you?
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, I started up in a pretty lower middle class family. My dad was a pastor. We never had a lot of money. This was always a dream for me. I literally started out in the industry that I was in making $5 an hour. I dropped out of college, didn't finish, was getting married, went to work for a company that, and I just learned everything I could about the company. I just worked as much as I could and ended up starting my own company doing kind of the same thing. And 25 years later was able to successfully sell it to a private equity group. But there's a lot of work along the way, and I don't think people see the work that went along the way. You know, Job and I have talked about this a lot. He doesn't remember the hard times so much because he was pretty young. He does remember being on the phone every time we were at Disney or and traveling. But that's really what it takes to get to the point where I am today. It's a lot of effort along the way. But I believe that in this country, and I believe anybody can do it. If they work hard, they'll find a way. There's so many ways to be successful in this country.
The American dream is still alive.
The American dream is still alive, despite what they might say in the media, despite what, you know, the pundits might say. The American dream is still alive.
You did rehabilitate a small town downtown. You worked at it. You started the candy shop.
You know, I did try. We bought, when I sold my business, my wife and I bought five buildings in our little downtown that were all dilapidated. We fixed them up kind of to incubate businesses. We did start one business. We ended up selling the other buildings to other businesses to start businesses. We tried to start other ones ourselves. It was actually, you know, getting back to the taking risk and trying things, one of the frustrating things for us was in this little town, we actually were building out buildings and offering to give free rent to people to start businesses, and we couldn't find takers. And that startled me a little bit.
In Indiana.
And it's a little town, but you know, we actually offered at one point to start a restaurant for somebody and completely equip the restaurant and give them years of rent for free just to put a restaurant in our town. And there just wasn't anybody that would take it. Nobody would take the risk. And I think that's the biggest challenge we have as a country right now and our younger people is that they've got to learn to take risk. So we've insulated ourselves from a lot of risk, it seems like, but it's going to take that to
and we don't be successful. We're not teaching kids how to fail. I mean, they hate no. to say that, but it's this dirty word. But in business, it's something you got to learn how to do, right?
Oh, yeah.
You got to learn how to fail.
Yeah, you got to pick yourself back up. You got to learn how to pick yourself back up when you do fail.
And you've been able to do that, and I think that's wonderful. I remember you giving the tours on the Warbird route. Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. You'd gotten rid of Warbird Digest. You'd sold it. And
yeah, I had to get rid of it. I mean, that's the interesting story is I was almost bankrupt in 2009. Literally, we were having a hard time feeding our kids because we had business problems with the recession. So I had to find other ways to keep involved, and one of those was doing the Warbird tram at Oshkosh. So
yeah, Job was there.
Yeah, he rode along with me. He was.
How old were you back then, Job?
2009. I would have been seven or eight.
Yeah. We were a young, budding, live streaming 24-hour a day, 7 day a week.
Yeah.
Warbird talk radio station back then.
I do remember that. Yeah.
7 years old. You were 7 years old. I remember seeing you out there at Oshkosh and shy kid.
Yeah.
Not a lot of words.
Yeah, I definitely got, as soon as I started flying, I definitely grew my confidence. That's for sure. That's one of the benefits of flying. It will absolutely make you a more confident person.
Yeah. I mean, it revolutionized his life. It really did.
Yeah.
It did. So,
I mean, till he started learning to fly, I mean, I'll be a little candid here. He had no idea what he was doing. And I was actually really worried about him because I didn't know what he was going to do. He was just kind of drifting, you know, like as you get to that 18, 19 year old and don't really have a plan.
Especially with a dad that has done so much, right? I mean, like, and tried all these things. I could see where it would be tough to say, well, what are you going to do, son? And looking at you and going, well, I don't know.
Yeah, yet. Well, it's tough living in the shadow.
Well, I mean, not only that, but success, I just meant, you know, such an adventurous personality and so unafraid to keep trying.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going with this. Is that it wasn't like you were, you know, you'd been in the oil and gas business for 25 years.
Right, right. Yep.
You were sort of fearless in the way that you looked at business and
all of
these things, but you don't remember the bad times. You remember the good times, and that's the great way. But right. It's so wonderful to be able to appreciate where your dad came from. So 2009, it's a rebuilding.
Yeah, it was, and it was, you know, we finally had recovered enough by, I think, the summer of 14, the fall of 14. When we bought the A26, and you know that allowed him to start participating in the air show thing
selling
again.
T-shirts, yeah. Under the wing. Talk to me about that, because here, what did you think? You're like, Dad's going to buy an A26. Did you know what it was?
He pulled me out of school that day and said, "Here's a surprise." And you know, this airplane, this twin engine airplane, comes overhead, and I'm really excited. I think it's a Tiger Cat.
Oh, well, and, now you're talking, Joe. Now you're talking.
And I was sorry to disappoint him.
It lands. It's an A26, and you know, I wasn't too familiar with an A26. You don't see them on the, you know, in the Warbird route as much as you do B25s and that kind of thing. But
which Dad had back in the day, a B25.
Yeah, when he was four and five, we had a B25. Yeah,
yep. Yeah, the Dragon.
But the A26 showed up, and it was polished, and it had black engine cowlings and nacelles. And I was like, this is a pretty cool airplane. It looked fast. It looks like a sports car, you know, airplane sports car. And I didn't know too much about it, but I heard it could carry as much as a B-17 and go about twice as fast. And, you know, it had the B-29 powered periscope turret in the back. And I just started learning all these things about the airplane and reading up at it, usually during school, read up on the airplane on Wikipedia and on Google.
During school. I like that. I caught that, Joe. I caught that. All right. Yeah. So, and then you decided this is something I might want to be a part of.
Yeah, I'd actually sit in the seat right behind the pilot's position, which wasn't originally a seat. It was a very, very small, pretty uncomfortable seat, but I could see everything going on. I could see what the engines were doing. I could see, you know, what the pilot's looking at certain parts of flight. You could see what you're flaring down the runway, and just I started learning a lot then and visualizing everything, and I could see how my dad would work the radios or work the GPS and work in coordination with the crew resource management with the pilot, and it was the community part of it too. You know, you bring a big airplane to an air show like that, and you go to dinner with the bomber guys, and you get to hear all their stories and what else they'd been doing, what other bombers they'd been flying, and it's just really, really cool to hear all their stories. That was the best part about it. You know, you get to fly with a lot of unique airplanes during the show. We flew with a Mosquito at one point in Thunder Over Michigan, and we had a yak chase us in Chino, and it was just really, really cool stories. And then I got to start sitting in the briefings and learning how a briefing worked and what flying an air show looked like and how, you know, you make it look good for the crowd. It was just really entertaining, and I learned a lot there. So it gave me a good leap forward when I started flying myself.
And then we all remember the landing. Here you are. You just get ahead.
Yeah.
The airplane's flying. You're thinking, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah, just replaced an engine literally 9 hours before that. That was an interesting time. I mean, it was...
The nose gear didn't come down.
The nose gear did not lock down. That's correct.
Famously at Oshkosh, of all places.
Yes.
But all the places to have that happen, probably one of the best.
From a CFR perspective, for sure. Yeah. It was good. There were people there. There were cranes there. They were ready. You know, if anything would have happened... the difficult thing for me is, you know, I was in the front of the airplane. He was in the back of the airplane in the back gunner's compartment. And the intercom had failed, and we didn't know it. The guys in the front didn't know. They didn't know what was going on in the back. So the first indication he had that there was a problem was when we were skidding down the runway.
Was sparks flying past the window.
Sparks and the canopies flying past the window, the whole works. And I do think that actually probably set his flying back a little bit. You were 14 probably. Yeah, you were 14.
Yep.
And you didn't want to have a whole lot to do with flying for a while after that. It actually took a few years to get past that.
The veil is lifted.
Absolutely.
You become suddenly very aware. I remember that exact time in my own life when it happened. You become very real that this stuff will kill you.
Yep.
Yep.
And it will kill a lot of other people if you're doing stuff that you shouldn't be doing in it. And that has to leave a mark, but it also has to make you a much better CFI.
And that's the way I look at it is, you know, we have this A26 accident. I don't go in an airplane for maybe 2 years. And then the next time I'm in an airplane, it's with my dad in the L2, you know, small fabric covered airplane. And I'm sitting here in the back on landing, worried the tail's going to come off. Cause the last time I'm in an airplane, you know, the tail gets shot 20 feet into the air. And so I'm really timid about it. And, I eventually just slowly build up to it, sitting in the airplane more and more. And now as a CFI, I can use those lessons from the past of I overcame those fears, and it gives me the tools to help other people overcome those fears. I was a very anxiety riddled person in high school. Well, now I have a lot more confidence, and I know how it feels to these new students coming into these airplanes. You know, they get in. I fly a lot of heavy tailwheel airplanes that people are intimidated by. And when I had a guy last week intimidated to hop into a heavy tailwheel airplane, and after he gets out of the airplane, he's like, yeah, that wasn't as bad. And you just gotta commit to it. My favorite thing to tell people, no matter who they are, you know, a 10-hour pilot, a ex-airline pilot, whoever they are, it's just an airplane. No matter what airplane you hop in, it's just an airplane. They're all the same. And that usually calms people down. It helps them realize, oh, yeah, it is just an airplane. And once they're done, you know, getting checked out in that airplane or doing whatever tasks they've done, they go, oh, yeah, you're right. This is doable. That's just really cool to see.
It's just an airplane, Tim.
Just an airplane. So.
I love that. I mean, you're right. It is just an airplane. You, on the other hand, Tim, it is just an airplane, but it takes a big check to make that happen. It is just an airplane. Let's talk about the collection and what you're doing with it, because you are now a Warbird collector. You have multiple airplanes, TBM.
P-40. We have a DC-3 and a C-47.
I always forget about the C-47.
Yeah, well, we haven't even picked it up yet.
Before long, you're going to be wondering where that Bearcat went.
Right.
Where did we leave the Bearcat? Yeah. I've heard that story before.
So we've got a lot of, I'm trying to build kind of a unique collection of unique airplanes. We've got a Tiger Moth that you and I have talked about quite a bit under restoration up in Canada, which will be a real beautiful airplane when it's finished. One of the unique things we just picked up is a Curtiss 052 Owl, which will be the only one flying in the world. There's only four of them in existence. It's about finished. So we're kind of trying to build a unique connection of stuff. We've got about 20 airplanes in the collection now.
And how are you going to share it? Are you going to share it? Are you going to have a museum, or is it going to just be?
Well,
to know Job.
No, we do have a museum. It's called Vintage Flying Machines, and we've been one of my big passions, as I mentioned earlier, is getting young guys involved. So Job's been checking out a lot of guys in our champ. And then we start moving them into the PT-26, which we have, and then try and start moving them farther up. We've typed a couple of young guys in the DC-3 as part of the museum. And, Luke was speaking with you earlier as an SIC. Luke's kind of a fun story because, you know, a year ago we didn't even know Luke, and now he's a big part of our team because he just fit. And we met him in England. He had come over.
As you do.
Yep. He came over in another crew. And I was having a snack in the cafe there at North Weald one day and started talking to him. And just, you know, real nice 19-year-old kid had flown over on the airline to be part of this thing, wasn't even flying with the C-47s, and we ended up bringing him home with us and across the Atlantic in the DC-3 because he just kind of hit it off with us, and he's been with us ever since.
You had another seat because Brad Pilgrim chickened out.
That's right.
You
know? Yeah. Always scared him off.
Yeah. You know? I don't blame him. Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, so our goal really is to identify people that have the passion and are willing to put the work in and be part of it and, you know, and get them started in these airplanes. I realize it's incredibly difficult to start flying these airplanes as a young person. I mean, but it's not impossible. And I do believe it's getting easier, as I mentioned earlier, but it's still hard. And so it's finding those right people with the right aptitude that are willing to put the work into it. You know, we've had some good success stories. We've had some that have come out and flown tail with us and disappeared, and, you know, they don't have the passion for it. It really is about the passion, so.
And finding those right mentors, like I talked about with Matt earlier.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. That person that's going to help you keep proficient, and if you're interested and you have that drive, they're going to see that, and they're going to propel you to go farther and farther. And if confidence is an issue, they're going to be one of those people that's going to say, "Hey, listen, I know I've seen how you fly, I've seen what you can do, you can or you can't do this," and they'll help keep you in your lane.
As we get ready to wrap things up here, what does 12-year-old Job want to tell Dad?
12-year-old Job. Well, I'm very thankful. I'm incredibly thankful for the opportunities, you know, from 5 years old in the B-25 to 14 in the A-26 and riding around in T-6s at Oshkosh in the backseat as a kid. I'm very thankful.
Dad, what do you want to tell 12-year-old Job?
I'm very proud of you even at 12, but it's been so fun to watch you grow up. And it's really neat to see what you're doing today. I mean, you've far eclipsed, as I said earlier, what I've ever done in aviation, and it's pretty neat to watch. So,
we were all pulling for you, both of you.
Thank you.
The best story, though, is watching the two of you.
Oh, thank you.
Together, that's my favorite part of this story. And it, you know, I'll never forget what I was watching social media on the feeds, and I see Job's getting in the P-40. It's going to happen. Today's the day. And then then you learn how to become a P-40 mechanic.
Yeah.
Yep. So is the A&P on the horizon, you think? Is it?
That's something I'd like to get at some point.
Yeah, something you're going to have to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and that we need those folks too.
Absolutely.
Savage family, thanks for hanging out today.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you both on, and I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely, anytime.
We've been talking to Job and to Tim, and of course to Luke, who stopped by earlier on this episode. If you haven't already signed up for our newsletter, please consider doing so. We appreciate you being here. So long for now.